The title of my sermon is Receiving and Giving Freely. And I reversed the order of what usually we say giving and receiving, but I changed it to receiving and giving because I want to emphasize the receiving part of it. And I want to allow some time after the sermon for any reactions that you might have or any questions that you might have. So as we're going along here, maybe you can keep those in mind. So last fall, an acquaintance of mine showed up at our house and spoke to mom. This was when we were here on, in San Diego. And he offered to rake leaves. And I was surprised when mom told me about this because I think of this person, this acquaintance, as more of a sort of professional associate than a close personal friend of the sort who would offer his help as I convalesced from my transplant surgery, thousands of miles away from home. I didn't really expect this act of generosity from that quarter. And it got me to thinking about my response to generosity and about the true nature of giving. So Lori and I recently have been the recipients of an outpouring of goodwill in many forms, including encouragement, prayers, cards, gifts, and acts of support. You might think we should not be surprised by it all. After all, isn't this the usual response of a loving community? And don't we regularly see and hear the feel-good stories in the news of even strangers reaching out to people in need? And yet, as the recipient of these blessings, I do feel a bit as if I've been lifted off my feet. This feeling doesn't only apply to my interactions with my social connections. The medical professionals who have been tending me in my infirmity and helplessness and pain have been ever so patient and caring. Well, now, isn't that what they get paid for? You might ask. And I say they go far beyond the basic requirements of the job. And I feel that they truly desire to see me restored to wholeness. Still, another gift that I have received, perhaps the largest of them all, is the gift of a heart, liver, and kidney. These were made available to me because either the donor designated themselves as an organ donor prior to their death, or their family acted on their behalf at the time of death. If it was the family, I imagine they committed this act of generosity at a time of sudden and tragic circumstances and loss and grief. Because the organ donation system protects the anonymity of both the donor and the recipient, there's no way that I can respond at present, even to say thank you to the donor's family. I'm told that in the future, having allowed some time to elapse, I'll be able to write a note which the Organ Transplant Network will forward anonymously to the family. Nevertheless, this gift, which is in effect the gift of life itself, so enormous that there can never be a response of equal magnitude. I think this lack of symmetry between the gift and the response can make us a little uncomfortable at times. I know I feel this way. It's like the feeling of showing up at a potluck without having brought a dish to contribute. I think many of us would rather be on the giving end than on the receiving end. That is, of course, unless you're a small child. Little children have yet to absorb the values and practices of our market-driven economy. This framework informs us that goods and services can be assigned a value so that you can buy and sell and trade them equitably. Now, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with this. The problem is that we tend to apply it, this mindset, to all of our transactions, all of the transactions we participate in. Somebody does us a favor, and now we feel that we owe them a favor. I should give Chris a loaf of bread I baked because he helped me with the brakes on my car. We tend to keep score and would rather have a positive balance than feel in debt to someone else. We never want to appear to be that person who mooches off of everybody else. But really, How many moochers are actually around? The vast majority of us think of ourselves as pulling our own weight and then some. So you might ask, what about the idea of paying it forward? So let's deconstruct that concept a little bit. Paying it back is the idea of maintaining the balance between gift and response. It's based on the thinking that the recipient of a gift incurs an obligation, and this obligation can be satisfied by making an appropriate gesture back to the giver. Paying it forward still contains the element of an incurred obligation. The difference is that the obligation is fulfilled by making a response to someone other than the giver, usually someone with a need. And then this can be built upon if the new recipient fulfills their obligation by paying it forward to yet another person in need, extending the chain of giving an obligation into the future. So now, don't get me wrong, I think this is a wonderful idea. And I think that a sense of obligation can be a healthy thing to keep us from taking for granted the blessings that we receive. The point I want to make is that always keeping tally of what we've given and what we owe can interfere with our ability to receive graciously. It can interfere with our ability to delight in the gift as a little child does. So I'm going to look again at one of the scripture that that Steve read. This is the Matthew scripture. Matthew 10, verse 1 and verses 5 through 8. Jesus called his disciples to him, and he gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and heal every disease and sickness. These 12 Jesus sent out. And then I'll skip down. He says, as you go, proclaim this message: the kingdom of heaven has come near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. I think the translation that Steve read said something like without obligation. And I think that's the sense of the word that I like here. I'm really interested in this use of freely. Jesus was instructing the 12 disciples to go out and share the good news of the kingdom. The same spirit that it was shared with them. They had received that same good news, had experienced wholeness and healing without needing to pay anything. In the same way, they should share the wholeness and healing without creating any sense in themselves or in others that the beneficiaries are obliged to pay. Giving freely means giving without having any notion that the recipient is in your debt in any way. We often see this at play when we give anonymously or when we donate to an organization like Thrive that provides food for people in need. We don't expect anything back. We just give because we think it's the right thing to do. Receiving freely means receiving without creating within ourselves the notion that we have to pay for the gift in any way. I'm not saying that we shouldn't say thank you or express gratitude. We should always do that if we have the opportunity. Feeling thankful is not the same thing as feeling that we owe something. Gratitude is not obligation. Gratitude is a posture of receiving freely, while at the same time recognizing the source of the gift. Gratitude is humbly acknowledges that the gift is not an entitlement. Robin Wall Kimmerer writes in her little book, The Service Berry, expanding on the idea of economies of abundance versus economies of scarcity. Economies of abundance are sometimes referred to as gift economies. In an economy of scarcity, there's never enough. Desirable items that are scarce have a higher price than items that are plentiful. This is the law of supply and demand. An economy of scarcity encourages people to hoard their surplus. And I purposely use the word hoard because it has sort of a negative connotation. It usually refers to the practice of keeping more than one could reasonably expect to need or use and is associated with greed. It's what Jesus was talking about in the parable of the rich fool, which I'm going to read again. This is from Luke 12. And he said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." He told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What should I do? I have no place to store my crops." And then he said, "Ah, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat and drink and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?' This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God." I don't think the point of this passage is that people shouldn't prudently put aside for the future or for an emergency. The sin of the rich fool was not that he stored his unexpected surplus. It was that his focus was only on himself, thinking on how he would enjoy his life and not considering others in his community. He saw their scarcity as just an economic fact of life. He was rich materially, but not relationally. Notice the word "but" in the last sentence of the passage. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. Jesus is not saying, don't save for the future, but rather that actions with regard to your assets should honor God. In a gift economy, any surplus is automatically offered to the community. It is understood that the community will also provide to you from the surplus of others, the members of the community. Even in times of true scarcity, the community strives to ensure there is enough, and there is gratitude, not obligation. So we're told that the early church operated this way in the passage that we read before. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Now, whenever there's a discussion of this passage, I usually hear, "Well, that's communism." And communism is such a loaded term that it really doesn't help our understanding, and it tends to make us stop thinking about what was going on. So let's look at some other models of economies of abundance. To start out simply, I need to look no further than the end of my driveway in the middle of the summer. You see, the end of my driveway coincides with the end of Ernie Miller's driveway. And on many a summer day, you can find there a box or table containing surplus produce from Ernie and Chris's garden. Squash is usually represented. It's understood that anyone passing by can help themselves to the produce, and I doubt that anyone takes more than they need. Another model of economies of surplus occurs within families. It's very common for relatives to support each other by offering money and time and skill, advice, influence, access, use of property, and many other forms of surplus. It is understood that this is just the way healthy families operate. When the family is strengthened, all the members of the family benefit. Economies of surplus arise spontaneously in times of disaster. Complete strangers make donations of what they have to those who have experienced tragic loss. Ideally, in a gift economy, givers and receivers don't keep score. It's understood that the transactions are free. This doesn't mean there is no reciprocity. There is reciprocity, but the emphasis is relational rather than material. Kimmerer says it in this way: "When I speak about reciprocity as a relationship, let me be clear. I don't mean a bilateral exchange in which an obligation is incurred and can then be discharged with a reciprocal payment. I mean keeping the gift in motion in a way that is open and diffuse, so that the gift does not accumulate and stagnate, but keeps moving. I like this idea of this image of reciprocity as a dynamic that keeps moving, keeps being renewed, keeps nourishing the community by building relationships. This is the lesson I'm trying to better learn about receiving and giving freely. So far, I've alluded to this idea that our abundance is not limited to material possessions, but I want to make more of a point of this. So I'm going to show you a picture. It's also the picture that appears in your bulletin. Okay, this is a picture from our fireplace mantle at our temporary residence in San Diego. The cards displayed on the mantle all have original artwork of the senders. They shared their abundant talent with us. Each card says, "I care about you so much that I want to give you an expression of myself that I created with skill and care." Every time we glance at the mantle, our lives are enriched by the reminder that we are loved. Our abundance that we can share may be the deliciousness of a pie, or time spent with a lonely shut-in, the fragrance of a newly baked loaf, the loan of a tool, an extra pair of hands, an invitation to play dominoes, a bunch of fresh-cut flowers, a listening ear, a word of wisdom, praise, or encouragement, a ride to the doctor's office, a precious memory, a song, the skill of leadership or organization, an invitation to lunch, a like on a Facebook post. The list is endless. And we already do all of these things and many more in this community. But I want to acknowledge them as gifts that, for the most part, we give freely and we receive freely. So, to sum up, first of all, Lori and I want to say how grateful we are for your support during this time, this ordeal of surgery and recovery. It's meant a lot to us. This morning, I've been sharing with you some of what I have learned, or I'm trying to learn, from being on the receiving end of a lot of generosity these last 6 months or so. I'm learning that thinking about my assumed indebtedness just gets in the way of delighting in the gift and the giver, of receiving freely as a child. I'm trying to strengthen my attitude of gratitude. I'm learning, I hope, to receive and give freely without keeping score. Thank you.